The Postal Service's finances need to be addressed once and for all, and it might be time to rethink the civil service system. And this is all according to Senator Ron Johnson. The Wisconsin Republican will replace Delaware Democrat Tom Carper as chairman of the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee come December. I spoke with Senator Johnson about his priorities.
Let me step back in terms of describing how I view the committee. It really is two committees in one. You've got the Homeland Security portion of it, then you have the Governmental Affairs. From my standpoint right now, at this moment in time in history, world history, the threats that are facing America, facing the world, there's going to be an awful lot of emphasis on the Homeland Security portion of that. First and foremost, concentrating on passing a strong border security and enforcement bill. So in terms of the committee work, that's my top priority. But from governmental affairs standpoint, the other area of security that Americans are looking for is economic security. Our economy is not growing to the extent it should, and there are a number of reasons for that. We have an uncompetitive tax system. We have federal policies that are trying to artificially drive up the cost of power, and we have a regulatory burden that is onerous in this country. So the governmental affairs part of the committee, I really want to concentrate on finding areas of agreement with both Republican and Democrat colleagues on regulations that are hurting businesses in their states, keeping the economy from improving to the extent it really should. So that would be my top priorities. When it comes to the federal workforce, listen, I have, in my 4 years serving here, I've been very impressed with the quality of the federal workforce, and my attitude has always been, I want to be able to pay the federal workforce fair wages, fair benefits. Nobody wants to underpay public sector workers, but at the same time, we can't overpay them. So my approach to running the committee, to looking at these issues, is the same approach I use in business. In a competitive environment, you have to benchmark the attributes of your business, or in this case, you have to benchmark federal pay versus and public sector pay versus private sector pay. And that'd be just the first initiative if we get into that. You know, based on priorities, there's only so much time, so many hearings you can actually do, and they're, as I said, higher priority items. I think it's probably wise to get the information. You know, exactly where does federal pay and benefits, or how does federal pay and benefits compare to the private sector? And it's a muddy situation right now. I've seen reports going back and forth. You know, federal pay and benefits are more generous than private sector and vice versa. So I just want to get the information. I want to get to the truth.
Yeah, we've read them all, too, and it's hard to know who to believe. And early on in the Obama administration, this goes back to the first time around, there was talk with his new OPM director at that time of really fundamentally re-looking at civil service. It's been about 60 years since the whole GS system was really reviewed. Maybe the senior executive service coming in the mid-70s was a change. Do you think maybe that could be revived now, since they never did get around to that?
Well, if you're going to really do something significant, it requires presidential leadership. And, you know, this president, I would argue, is not the provided particularly strong leadership at addressing the debt and deficit issue, or exactly what you're talking about there in terms of you know, the whole federal workforce issue. So, you know, I think from my standpoint, what I can do is hold hearings to get the information. You know, let's get the facts and figures would be the first step, and that's I can't tell you where I'd go beyond that, because it would be totally dependent on what we find in our fact-finding hearings.
And the other red-headed stepchild for your committee and also your counterpart on the House side is what to do with the U.S. Postal Service. And the same proposals seem to go round and round and round, and there's never any agreement to get legislation. Do you think there's a chance now, at least with unified party on both sides of the House and Senate, that maybe that could get moved along?
Well, we could try, but let's face it, Republicans will not have a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate, and so it will require some bipartisan effort, and I was supportive of and appreciative of Senator Carper and Senator Coburn's, I think, very good-faith effort at trying to come to some negotiated, some compromise a solution here. I always had my doubts. We're trying to resolve basically a bankrupt organization. I think in the private sector, you take a look at the U.S. Postal Service and go, this is a bankrupt entity. And in the private sector, you would take that bankrupt entity and you resolve that. You'd resolve that financial system under the protection of the bankruptcy code in bankruptcy court. That's the way you do in the private sector. Here, we've been trying to resolve a bankrupt entity through a political process, and it hasn't worked too well. But we got to keep trying because, you know, from my standpoint, our primary responsibility with the postal system is to, first and foremost, achieve the constitutional a duty of having a postal system and providing postal delivery, but also get the American taxpayer off the hook for, you know, not only the unfunded liabilities of the postal system, but also for potentially future deficits. So this is a problem that's not going away. It was unfortunate, quite honestly, the Postmaster General has announced his retirement. I thought that individual was a pretty quality individual, and I think the Postal Service has been improved under his leadership. We're going to have to find every bit as strong a new Postmaster General.
And talking about the Homeland Security Department itself, aside from the national security questions that you brought up earlier, which we'll get back to, they have achieved now for the second year in a row a clean financial audit, which for that department was a major achievement. What do you see next in the evolution of a department which still looks disparate and unconnected in some ways, even according to its current leadership?
Well, I've talked to Chairman McCall about this as well, as I know he's talked about finally having authorization for the department. I think that would be something that we should really take a serious look at, if not a run at. And from my standpoint, it really is, after more than a decade now of the department existing, what we've done is you've cobbled together 22 different agencies. They all had their own reporting and oversight responsibilities to different committees in Congress. It's become a pretty onerous burden. Now, we need appropriate oversight, but I think we really do need to take a look at that so that the Department of Homeland Security is successful in its mission of keeping America safe. So I think potentially we could achieve the type of streamlining, achieve appropriate level of oversight if we can reduce the number of committees that have that responsibility. And I think that would be a worthy goal.
And some agencies that moved into Homeland Security maybe, do you think, could be better positioned back where they were with some other department?
I think that'd be part of the analysis and really take a sober look at it and take a look at are there some of these agencies better back where they used to be, or are there better fits in different agencies? So this is probably a pretty good time to take a look at it. I've certainly made a commitment to Secretary Johnson that I want to do everything I can to help him succeed. And this is certainly one area that I think he would appreciate Congress taking a look at and certainly streamline the reporting he must do. Again, you have to maintain adequate reporting, adequate oversight. He doesn't disagree with that. But I think right now it's probably a bit of overkill.
We're speaking with Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, soon to become the chairman of the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. And talking about what you mentioned earlier, regulation and agency regulation gambits that are going on now, and successive administrations, even this one, have said they want to roll back regulations, but the volumes of regulations never really go down. They just grow faster or slower, depending on who's in charge. What's the mechanism for actually having regulation reform, do you believe, to maybe stop what you see as over-regulation of the economy?
Well, you first have to describe to the American public and to policymakers here that the regulatory burden is onerous, that it's doing harm to our economy, that there really are concepts like the law of diminishing returns that are real concepts, and we have to take a look at that. So from my standpoint, I would like to do a deep dive into every department, find out how much money they spent, what their missions were, what their goals were, to what extent have they achieved them, and what have been the unintended consequences of a lot of agency and department actions. And so it really is, I view the role of these committees as holding hearings to identify problems, to properly define them, so that people admit they have the problem. So I think it's really that first step is we have to admit that the regulatory overburden is onerous in this country. And there are hearings we held, I think I was a ranking member with Mark Warner, when we had a hearing on the British one in, one out rule. It's kind of an interesting concept. If an agency promulgates or issues a new regulation, they've got to find a regulation to cancel or eliminate that has equal compliance costs. Just a process for cleaning house, because what ends up happening is the size of government only ratchets in one direction in general up. It continues to grow. We really need to have a process for subtraction in the federal government. Right now, everything here is a process of addition. One of the analogies I use, if you look at the American economy as the hull of a ship, what's happened over decades is you've got layer upon layer of barnacles building up. Now, the solution in that case is pretty common sense. You scrape off the barnacles. You clean the hull of the ship. In Washington, what happens is every agency, every legislator seems to have a new barnacle in mind that they just tack on as additional layers. So I really think it's a mindset of understanding the problem, understanding how harmful regulations are, understand the law of diminishing returns and have a really dedicated process and effort towards subtraction rather than always addition.
And on the border protection question, what would be the features of a bill you envision? In other words, what laws need to be augmented that would protect the border more than it potentially can be protected under current legal framework?
Well, coming from a manufacturing background, I've done a lot of problem solving, and there's an organized approach to doing it. It really involves root cause analysis. So when I look at border security, the first thing that pops into my mind is, well, let's try and eliminate or dramatically reduce all the incentives for illegal immigration. I think that'd be the number one component of a strong border security bill is eliminate or reduce those incentives. What's the number one incentive for illegal immigration? It's the same incentive that's been in place for a couple hundred years in America. People are coming to America looking for work and opportunity. So let's turn that into a legal process, a controlled legal process where we are matching the supply and demand for labor. Let's get the states fully involved. They can set the quotas. They can set the prevailing wage rates. We don't want to incentivize employers to attract low-cost labor that depress American wages. So to me, and apparently it's somewhat out-of-the-box thinking, is a border security bill ought to have a functioning guest worker program. You go back to the 60s when we had the Becerra guest worker program, we really didn't have much of an illegal immigration problem. It's when that program got canceled that this problem really started. So let's have in place a functioning legal immigration system. It'll dramatically reduce the flow of illegal immigration, which is going to make it a whole lot easier to secure the border. And, of course, the things you have to look at in terms of border security is, you know, we have to beef up the fencing in some areas. There may be a requirement for additional Border Patrol agents, although the Association of Retired Agents say that's not the problem. We need interior enforcement. You need things like E-Verify. So, I mean, there are all those components to border security as well. It's not just about surveillance and militarizing the border. I think there's an awful lot of things we can do to reduce the incentives, reduce the number of people that are coming here illegally, and it just makes it a whole lot easier securing the border than as a result.
And final question, with December 11th looming, which is the time at which the current continuing resolution runs out, what's your best handicap, just as a senator, one of 100, on how this will get resolved?
Well, we're not going to shut down the government. I mean, I think that's very clear. Nobody on the Republican side is talking about that. Sometimes members of the press ask the question. But it's either going to be some kind of omnibus spending bill that's prepared by the appropriation committees. If President Obama takes his unilateral action, I hope he doesn't. I think that's unwise, unfortunate. It will make it more difficult to find common ground in other areas. You don't start a process, a new session, picking a fight. Let's try and find the areas of agreement. I think that's what we want to do, which is why we don't want to threaten any kind of shutdowns. We want to fund the government. But if we got attached riders to prevent him from taking certain action that we think he probably doesn't have the legal authority to do, I think that'd be appropriate. If the Senate doesn't go along with that, there are things we can do short term till we get control or get a majority in the Senate. So, again, I think the main mindset is nobody wants to shut down the government. That will be avoided. I'm very confident of that.